Hello and welcome to Swiss Info's program for May 30th. I'm Susan Masika.
Here things are actually pulled apart and we've got original pieces laying on the ground out there and you can really get a better idea how it all works. I think it's great for them.
In fact, they are able to produce a decent quality of raw silk that you can produce a couple of silk ties.
I hope you're wearing comfortable shoes. We're going to walk 10 miles in the Bernese countryside with a bunch of American carpenters on a frame-spotting tour of timber-framed houses. Their leader, a young man with Swiss roots and a fascination with the homeland. Also making a comeback in Switzerland, silk production, thanks to a few farmers who are willing to take a chance.
Der Grüße miteinander, ich bin Bauer David, 26-jähriger Zimmermann von Stadt Indiana in den USA.
In case you don't understand Swiss German, that was David Baller, a 26-year-old carpenter from Indiana. His ancestors left Switzerland for economic and religious reasons, making David a member of the fourth generation born in the U.S. Although he's American, he and his family identify strongly with their Swiss roots.
We've maintained contact and connection here to Switzerland in all those times, and still, I guess, consider it to be the homeland because it's not a situation where we left because we thought America was better. We left because we had to. So.
And why did you have to?
Couple reasons. Economic, that was during the famine years in this part of the country, and so a lot of people left during those times. And religious reasons, we were not in the state church of Bern, and that didn't go over very well in those days. So it was easier for us just to leave and move to America where there was freedom for things like that.
So are you part of the Mennonite movement?
Today, yes. My ancestor would have been part of the Neuteufer movement, the another related movement that kind of came out of the Mennonites in the Canton of Bern, I think in about the 1830s.
Since then, David and his family have always thought of themselves as Swiss, eating lots of Swiss-style food and cheese and enjoying traditional music, including Alphorns and yodeling. I met him during the 11-day tour he was leading for the Timber Framers Guild. The U.S.-based guild has supported tours to places like England, France, and China. This time, the Bernese Oberland was the focus, because it has some of the best Swiss wooden architecture. 11 people decided to join David.
They are a group of carpenters, timber framers, and related professionals interested in different building traditions around the world. Some people are looking for inspiration, for new ideas, things they can adopt. Other people are just enjoying their time. It's more just a vacation for them.
The Guild has done a number of, people refer to them as frame spotting tours. And I've marveled at some of the slideshows and photos and presentations that people have made. And I've always wanted to come to Switzerland. And I wanted to see something entirely new, with new eyes, but with now eyes that are trained from years of experience in the field.
And it was just an opportunity to come back to what we think may have been the home country, and also to see some timber framing, which I enjoy.
I've built two frames in my life. I've built many other smaller elements of timber work. I love to work with, you know, full trees and large, you know, large timbers. But my specialty is a little bit different than the rest of the group. So I'm looking at the trees, the forestry. We saw a sawmill earlier today that was really fun to take a look at. That was down in the first town we pulled in.
I tagged along on day 4, which started with a bus ride to Amseldingen, the home of a Romanesque church. Dating back to the year 930.
The cross beam is supporting this post and hanging off of that corbel. Yeah, right. So that's, and then it's also supported down here.
Yeah, and the notch up there keeps it from falling.
That
apart.
Is just so awesome. I'm going to steal
somebody
that.
Added bolts.
It was also a good place to check out a special kind of rooftop.
This style of house with the low pitched roof and the gable is what they call a Tachdach, which just means that. A lot of them, this used to be super common all throughout the Canton of Bern.
Then we hopped on the bus to Blumenstein, where we began walking along the Stockenthaler Hausweg. It's a route with stunning examples of wooden homes and barns from the 17th and 18th centuries. But before we got to those, we came across a weathered chalet with green shutters and an unusual concrete stairway. As everybody was snapping pictures, the owner appeared on the balcony. I worried he was going to say, "Get lost," but just the opposite happened. Rolf, the artist slash carpenter, gave us a tour of his workshop, which was bursting with tools and antiques, including a vintage motorcycle. Soon we were poring over old building plans and sniffing freshly planed cedar. When Rolf learned that the tour group was from the U.S., he talked about some ancestors of his who had fled the area after severe flooding. Apparently, they were given 1,000 francs to emigrate. Now he has relatives in Ohio. In the backyard, he showed us the cottages he had made out of repurposed wood.
It's not actually old, but it's made of old wood and made to look old.
Münster House or Muster?
Muster House.
A little sample, kind of show house.
We thanked him and said, "Wieder Luege," see you later, and hit the trail again. The weather was warm and the scenery fantastic. Not just architectural treasures, but also lush fields, grazing cattle, and the snow-capped Eiger, Mönchenjungfrau in the distance. A little while later, we made another unexpected stop. This time it was a construction project, the painstaking renovation of a farmhouse on the preservation list. We introduced ourselves, and the workmen invited us inside for a closer look.
If you want, you can go in. And...
Okay, thank you very much.
Come and get around.
So we did, and had the run of the place for a little while.
It's a great opportunity for all these people to actually see work in progress and see something old torn apart. And see inside of it and see the guts. Like, we went to Ballenberg and you can poke around inside of things, but here things are actually pulled apart and we've got original pieces laying on the ground out there and you can really get a better idea how it all works. I think it's great for them.
In the afternoon, we finally found the buildings with the most personal significance. Houses built by David's ancestors, who were master carpenters. He burst into a huge smile upon seeing the first one. A cute house with red geraniums and a fountain out front.
The first time I'd never seen a lot of these houses before, but I've studied them and seen pictures of them and such, and knew about them, and we studied back in the genealogies and stuff and figured out those were in fact the guys. So it's pretty neat to actually see it and know the connection to it.
So Christian Baylor, he was your great-great-great...
He would have been... 9 or 10 generations ago.
Yeah. And does it occur to you that things have been different, that maybe you would live here? Maybe you would have inherited this house?
Not this house, but there is another house that was built by this guy's father for him somewhere along this trail. So, could be.
Could you imagine living here?
I should knock on the door and ask him if he'll let me stay. Say, "Hey, my great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather built this place."
There were others nearby, representing the work of a few generations. David took a lot of pictures of these homes with the name Baller carved into the walls. I asked him if he thought carpentry was in his blood.
I'd like to think so. My father was not a carpenter, and my grandfather was not a carpenter. They were farmers, and their attempts at carpentry were generally rather poor, not having any training or experience. But it's always something I've been interested in, and me and my brothers were always making things and building things in one way or another, if you can call it that. So it's always something that's interested me, and it's nice to think that it's something inherited.
After saying goodbye to his Timber Guild colleagues, David stayed in Switzerland for a while to help out on a friend's farm. One of his other interests is cheese making, and the Alps are a perfect place for that. I asked David if he could imagine living here.
Yeah, I could, quite easily.
Going to do anything about it?
Don't know. We'll have to see. If the opportunity is there, then quite possibly.
What if you met a Swiss woman while you're here on this tour?
You never know what could happen.
Yeah.
Indeed, having a sense of adventure can take you to some interesting places, as the people behind the nation's emerging silk industry know. And while they can't compete with the world's biggest producers, bringing silk production back to Switzerland is an interesting source of extra income. That's the sound of silkworms munching on fresh mulberry leaves. It takes about 5,000 silkworms to spin enough cocoons for a kilo of raw silk. In 2014, the Swiss Silk Group made about 20 kilos of silk. According to President and farmer Uli Ramseyer, the silkworms are very sensitive. Poor hygiene can lead to bacterial or viral illnesses. Irregular feeding can also cause problems.
The speed of development, it's very fast. Your time for reaction is quite small, because if you miss 2 days in a certain stadium of this silkworm rearing, it makes a big difference, and you can make faster mistakes than with a cow.
Ramseyer is one of about 30 people trying to revive Switzerland's silk industry, which petered out about a century ago. The production goal is 100 kilos per year within the next 5 years. The ultimate target would be a ton per year. In comparison, China produces 100,000 tons of raw silk a year. Patrick Genu of SOL Silk Opportunities is Switzerland's biggest silk trader. He gets his material from China, Brazil, and India, and his firm supports Swiss silk.
Indeed, now after 6 years, it seems that, in fact, they are able to produce a decent quality of raw silk, that you can produce a couple of silk ties or scarves and maybe some other products, and then find a market for that.
The only catch is cash. As the producers learn the ropes, silk production hasn't been very profitable. Ramseyer estimates that last year, he only earned about 12 francs an hour. Luckily, it's only a side business.
We draw a line for ourselves and say, if we are not managing to get 20 Swiss francs out of this activity per hour, then we will stop the program.
At their general assembly, the members of Swiss Silk talked about how they could increase their earnings. For example, they could sell souvenirs like cocoons or embroidery floss.
Because we have a lot of people who visit our farms, and they always want to buy something.
And for the bigger spenders, how about a tie for 150 francs? Swiss textile firm Weissbrod Zürer took Swiss Silk's first 20 kilos and wove it into a collection of ties and scarves. The next batch will be available in November. You can read more about that and other Swiss handiwork on swissinfo.ch. Thank you for listening, and thank you to studio technician Daniel Wheeler. I'm Susan Masika.